You're listening to the Laugh Button Podcast on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
The new comedy.
Welcome back to another episode of the Laugh Button Podcast. I am Matt Kleinschmidt, the editor-in-chief of thelaughbutton.com and host of the Laugh Button Podcast. And with me again, I brought the gang back together. We got Bram Teitelman, editor-in-chief of Metal Insider.
Yeah.
We got Nick DeSimone in the house, also from Metal Insider and Metal Albums with Googly Eyes. And what else is he in? I don't know.
Some band.
Yes.
And of Uber fame.
Yeah, of local Uber fame. If you're calling an Uber in the
Jersey City area,
primarily the Hoboken, New Jersey area, I mostly just get angry.
Are there any good Uber stories that you have, like that you could share, like where like couples like making out in the back of your car, like some dude vomited?
Vomited. However,
eat that mic, buddy.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. Yep. Nobody's ever vomited, but a real good one was I picked up in an Uber pool. I picked up an entire carload of people. Right. So like three in the back, one in the front. Mm-hmm. And they all...
Is that kind of like two in the pink, one in the stink?
Exactly.
Well, except like, the Uber shocker.
Way more horrible. But they turns out they all knew each other, and they had never... None of them had seen each other in like 10 years.
Really?
So it was like this weird high school reunion happening in my car. It was very strange. But usually it's way worse than that because I'm driving in like the most yuppie garbage. Like, I'm mostly degrading myself for the pocket change of shitty yuppies.
Driving garbage people? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, I'm mostly just driving like the shittiest people or like... Just the best stuff is like they'll get in the car and they'll, you know, I have my map, have my Google Maps, and that's got all the traffic and all that.
And Waze, but then and all they'll, that stuff, you know, you need.
Don't follow that. Listen to me. I'm going to tell you where to go. So I ignore my map, and then 5 minutes later, we're sitting in traffic. What? Why is this taking so long? I don't know, Magellan. This is your fault. And I knew where I was going.
And Uber's not like one of those things where you get paid by the mile. It's part of the trip, correct?
You do get paid by the mile. You get paid by the mile and by the time, but the time is trivial. So it's base fare plus mile plus time plus surge plus tolls.
Welcome back to the Uber podcast.
Hi there. I'm here to tell you all about my own personal hell after work.
Welcome back to the Lift Button.
The Lift Button. Hey. That was pretty good.
Nice.
All right. So, yes, this is the Laugh Button podcast. You can find us on Riotcast.com and anywhere you type in the Laugh Button into a browser. That's basically it. Actually, you know what? I've never actually just typed the Laugh Button into a browser, but I'm assuming it performs a search. It doesn't like pull up our socials or something. Real quick, before we dive into all of this clusterfuck of bullshit, of cluster of fuckery.
Are mom and dad going to fight this week?
At all. Not at all. Our guest this week is Anthony DeVito. Anthony DeVito is a New York City comedian who's up and coming, and he is fucking hilarious. He recently did a set on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, which was his late night debut, I would say about 2-3 weeks ago, I think is when he did that. And then Anthony literally just taped a half hour for Comedy Central as part of the new half hour series. So he's got a ton to talk about. And I heard a rumor through the grapevine, and he doesn't know I'm going to ask him this yet, but we're going to talk about Mumford & Sons, because apparently he's like friends with the guys from Mumford & Sons.
Is he friend with Mumford or just the Sons?
I think it might be just Mumford, actually. Hmm. So I'm going to get to the bottom of this in this interview with Anthony, so I'm looking forward to asking this question.
Are you sure it's not the Lumineers?
Or the Head and Heart? It might be. Well, apparently, and I don't want to ruin the interview, but apparently there was a while where like the Mumford & Sons and Lumineers and like all the people that like genre, they were on like a train ride across country doing tours, and they actually taped a documentary about it, and apparently comedians were involved somehow. So I think that's his entry, but we'll find out. So you'll have to wait. There's a teaser. Dun, dun, dun.
Tune in later in the podcast. Don't go anywhere.
A train full of folk rock bands.
Yeah, basically.
If anybody breaks a suspender, there's lots of extras lying
around. I see what you did there.
I seem to have misplaced my mustache wax.
Hey guys, this steam pipe hat is flat.
There's a gigantic kettle drum. Where'd this come from?
my foot up your ass.
Oh wow.
So do we hey ho this or ho hey this? What do we do? Which one is it, guys?
I want to ask Naughty by Nature.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's a
there
nice throwback.
Go. I see what you did there. Yeah. This is like the round table of riffing, so I don't know what's going on. So guys, what's new with you guys? What's been happening in the last have you become like internet famous since the Limp Bizkit Kermit the Frog?
God, if only. I feel like we got to do something more to capitalize.
Oh,
on that.
I don't know.
We got to do.
I don't know. It was one of the funniest, hardest I've laughed on this podcast.
There was a while. I do. You know what? I have a Kermit the Frog puppet. There was some talk about a video at some point,
buddy. I will produce this video.
I got it though.
I will put up on the laugh button, and I will help with its virality.
It's been in the cooker for a little bit there.
We need to make this happen.
I found on YouTube like a shitty version of. Like a karaoke version of Break Stuff
without
the vocals. So
you've done everything but actually
dude, I have a camera.
It's all together.
I have editing software. I will do this. This sounds like a Friday, like 4 o'clock type of endeavor.
Yeah.
When we're at our most creatively lucid within the office. Where
our most lucid moments are fucking Kermit.
But I'm thinking about it like... The goofiest times in the office are like those times where it's just like it's been a long week or it's been a long day. I mean, like the most ridiculous one was we have desks that beep now because they raise and lower, and they have a locking mechanism, but the beep still happens. And we did a little beep off to the theme of Daft Punk's "Get Lucky," medley of "Get Lucky."
Also, it was a really nice humble brag you did there. Oh, the laugh button has electronic desks that raise and lower and beep.
Fuck you.
We plug our desks
seriously,
in.
Seriously, like, why? Humble bragging about my desk?
Yeah.
When mom and dad
there's a lot of people out there that would kill for the opportunity to have a desk that plugs in.
You're like the oldest child from Bob's Burgers. What's her name? Not Louise. Louise is the youngest one by Kristen Shaw.
Tina.
Yeah. Nick is the Tina of the group. Good times. So it's been about a week. I'm sorry, you were becoming internet famous. Bram, what were you doing besides wearing a Beyonce metal shirt?
I'm wearing just this Phantom Beyonce shirt. That's all that's been going on in my life, actually.
Oh, good to hear.
Yeah, I know. It's very exciting.
I know. You excited?
Playing music.
You excited for the spring?
I am. By the way, if there's anyone in the New York area, I'm just going to get this plug in right now.
Oh.
Black Whale, my band, is playing at Arlene's Grocery next Friday, and you should be there.
Next Friday being the...
The 5th, Cinco de Mayo.
You didn't even ask what day this is going to go live. Maybe this is live in 2 weeks. I'm just fucking with you. It'll be live.
May 5th, 2018. We're going to book another show there.
It'll be live like in the day. So, yeah, that's some good news. So, some of the things we've missed over the last... 7 days, 100 and whatever hours that is we missed an episode of 48 Hours, which actually featured Patton Oswalt's wife. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the story of what happened to Patton's wife, but she was basically a true crime author. And basically, there was a killer, serial killer, rapist, terrorizing kind of the Southern California area in the late 70s and 80s. She was hunting this killer, the serial killer. Not hunting in like a, she's not a cop. She was just a true crime author and thinks she was like, you know, chasing down leads. 48 Hours did a whole expose on her and everyone that's been kind of hunting the serial killer, following up with the serial killer. Because Patton Oswalt, basically, when she died, he was like, she was too good a person, too great a person. This is knowledge of true crime to like let her book and her life's work kind of not go unfinished. So Patton basically took it upon himself to finish it with a couple of her friends who were writing the story with her. And 48 Hours did this crazy piece on it. It was like unbelievable to see. I mean, don't know if you guys caught it or not. It was on Saturday.
I did not. I did read his 1 year after Facebook post.
Yeah,
and, you know, pretty much brought a tear to my eye, quite honestly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, too. The timing of all this is crazy because this 48-hour special was on the 1 year, basically on the 1 year anniversary of her death. And Patton was releasing his latest stand-up special that he actually went up to win an Emmy on the day after, or the day she was discovered, he discovered her dead in her. In their bedroom. So it was like the highest of highs of releasing a new stand-up special, the lowest of lows to losing your wife, to a year later to having this whole story kind of like be told to the public. I mean, obviously a lot of the comedy community kind of rallied around Patton and knew what was going on, and he came up for air probably about, I would say, like 5 to 6 months after.
He won
a
Grammy for the special.
It was an Emmy. Right? An Emmy, and I think that led to a Grammy as well, if I'm not mistaken. But it was just kind of interesting because like Patton disappeared and has kind of come back up. You know, obviously he's dealing with grief and all that kind of stuff that I couldn't possibly imagine. But it's kind of like, all right, now he's determined to kind of finish his wife Michelle's work. It's kind of really, really interesting. So I don't know. It's the latest episode of 48 Hours. It's totally worth watching. It's very, very fascinating. So I would definitely recommend, comedy fan, podcasting fan, because there's a lot of true crime out there these days. I definitely recommend anyone kind of checking it out and seeing what's going on. one, so who knows?
Also good, another 48 hours. Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy, they're and hysterical. Eddie Murphy. I think we're all just kind of doing a Neutron Dance, aren't we?
That was a right. Different Neutron Dance wasn't that one.
I think that was Beverly Hills Cop, actually. I'm just...
Oh jeez, you're just like reaching.
I know, I'm just throwing Eddie Murphy, that wacky talking donkey.
Hey man, one of these are going to stick. I'm determined to make it happen.
That's what I do.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott. That's like one of the best quotes ever.
Gretzky, Michael Scott.
You're familiar with what we're talking about, right, Nick?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I just okay, forgot
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, there's that infamous Wayne Gretzky quote that Michael Scott quoted and then quoted himself quoting Wayne Gretzky. The Office. The Office was great until like the last, like after he left.
I still
like
it.
Left.
It wasn't the same show, but it was still enjoyable.
It wasn't. I mean, but like sometimes it was just like it was. I understand why the show continued. NBC was like really kind of like that's all they had, and so who knows? I don't know. So I understand why they hung on to it, but it also just wasn't necessary. So I don't know. Another thing that's I don't say it's unnecessary is I actually brought this topic a little earlier today that I wanted to talk to you about is the topic of comedy documentaries. And the reason it popped into my head was there's a couple comedy documentaries/shows that are like screening at festivals in the next couple weeks.
Let's call them Com Docs.
Com Docs?
Yeah, it's
okay.
Shorter.
Com Docs.
Com Docs.
It's not a...
That's like rom-com?
That does not roll at all.
No, it doesn't roll off the tongue at all.
Goddamn both of you.
I said goddamn. It just got me thinking about, like, there's so many comedy documentaries out
com
there.
Docs.
Like, there's so many Com Docs out there that it got me thinking of, like, what are some, like, great comedy documentaries out there that, like, people need to see and check out? And you guys have a definitely different perspective about this than I do because, like me, I've probably seen every comedy documentary at least once or in some form. But you guys are a little more of the, I don't want to say passive comedy fans, but you definitely don't like probably sit around and watch every comedy documentary that comes out. So just out of curiosity, have any comedy documentaries kind of flown across your bows that you guys have liked, thought were interesting, or like just kind of had some fun like, little association with?
You know, nothing really comes to mind.
Really? Okay.
What are some of the bigger ones that have been out there? I can't even really remember. I mean, I've seen plenty of concert films.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that like maybe have a few minutes of behind the scenes stuff going on, but I can't really, nothing really comes to mind.
What about you?
I've never seen any like comedy documentaries, but I'm such a consumer of like music documentaries, behind the scenes, Year in the Life of Metallica kind of stuff. Like
totally.
The making
some kind
of
Monster or whatever.
Kind of Monster. I watch Some Kind of Monster every year because as a musician, there's things to learn about that. It's a real case study in how not to be.
Okay.
Even if you're not a rich, famous man child, there's still a lot to take away from that. But I've never seen it, never anything with the comedy world.
That doesn't surprise me, but I mean, there's definitely like... first of all, the biopic or biopic, which some people call it, which I don't know why. Fuck those people.
No.
The biopic, I think there's more, people are more familiar with those. You know, there's the new Robert De Niro movie, Comedian, which came out. It's not really a biopic, but it's kind of like, it's the idea of it. You know, Woody Allen has kind of...
You know, I guess I have seen that Seinfeld Comedian.
Comedian, which is actually a really good one.
Which might be, I guess, you know, what would you call the gold standard? Like, what's the movie that other people compare
Comedian's
things to?
Comedian's definitely a good one. I think the biggest comedy documentary that I remember was The Aristocrats, because that actually, like, I remember that screening in theaters.
And I saw that.
It's basically, all of a sudden, Bram has seen comedy documentaries.
I'm thinking of, like, you know, when you said that, I was thinking of, like, actual documentaries about particular comedians.
Well, okay, but it's still
a
comedy.
Aristocrats basically
a bunch of comedians
telling a joke.
It's a very popular joke. It's like an iconic joke, and it features literally every comedian in there. And some of the big takeaways from that joke were Bob Saget, people realizing Bob Saget was fucking filthy because he told like the filthiest version of the Aristocrats, and Doug Stanhope telling the joke to a child, and then Sarah Silverman's play on that was she was talking about basically a comedy agent, and then she slowly realizes, well, the realizing being quote unquote realizes that was part of the joke was that like the comedy agent wasn't telling her the joke, but he was actually raping her, which only Sarah Silverman could pull off something like that, you know, just the way that she did, the way that she phrased it. But it was super interesting. But like, yeah, that's what I mean. Like comedy documentaries, like last year the big one was the Joan Rivers documentary. I'm sorry, that might have been the year she died, so maybe 2 or 3 years ago, was the Joan Rivers documentary, Piece of Work, which is literally just kind of shows her process. And that kind of got big.
All right, I got another one.
Yeah.
The South Park documentary about how making. That's fascinating.
It's super fucking fascinating.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Seven days to kill, six days to kill. Or 6 days to air, 7 days to air, something like that.
Just realized I've been nodding on this audio podcast for like the last 5 minutes.
Good
like,
work, Nick. Yes. Good work. But that's actually what I mean by that. It's unbelievably fascinating on how these guys put together South Park. And they still do it the same exact way. Like, it's like literally Standards and Practices knows general idea once they come up with it and they talk to them about it. But the first time Comedy Central sees South Park's newest episode is when it's fucking airing, which, if you want to talk about ultimate freedom, I mean, that's pretty much ultimate freedom. I mean, people
it's
talk
kind
about,
of what this podcast is like, actually.
Ultimate freedom. but it's true. But like, I mean, first of all, South Park really, really did in no small part really help build Comedy Central. And I think that show will always be on Comedy Central as long as Trey and Matt want to make it. You know what I mean? Like, cause like that is one of the standards of Comedy Central. But I mean, people talk about like how Louis C.K. gets this great deal with FX and people leave him alone. But like Comedy Central really does leave those dudes alone because they're uploading it at like 4 or 5 o'clock, maybe even a little later, for it to air 8 or 9. And there have been times where those guys have lost. They do it all from South Park Studios out in Colorado. And those guys literally, they conceive of it the next morning. They sit in the writer's room, which is basically Trey and Matt. But there's a couple, like during this documentary, Bill Hader had just left Saturday Night Live. And he was I don't want to say he was a writer, but he was kind of like a consultant, or just kind of like he was in the room with them to bounce ideas off them as they were pitching him to Bill. And if Bill laughed, they would kind of run down the idea. So like he was almost like a comedy barometer, I guess is probably a good way to put it, where Bill would laugh or whatnot too. And then they basically put the whole thing together, and Trey and Matt do all the voices for it. And they have, it's really unbelievably fascinating how quickly this show comes together. Fast forwarding to a couple years ago, I want to say last season or the season before that, they were in the middle of like a 3 or 4 mini run of like shows that kind of strung together. And based on Xbox and PlayStation, and they lost power at South Park Studios to the point where they lost power enough they couldn't get that week's episode out. So they actually delayed the release of subsequent episodes because of it. It's unbelievably fascinating how that all works. So good call on that one. That's actually one I wouldn't have thought of off the top of my head. But to go back to the comedian one, the Jerry Seinfeld one, that's actually a very interesting one too. And I think it's because the time in which Jerry was at the time, like he had just finished Seinfeld, like that critical run. And now he's like, what do I do? And he's just like, all right, start writing material and become a comedian again. And he basically went back to the comedy clubs, started to find a 5 minutes, put that into 10, into 15, into 20. And there was like just kind of showing like Jerry starting over while there was a competing storyline of Orny Adams kind of starting his trajectory to become to tell his performance, his first late night set on Letterman. So it's this really interesting thing that like Jerry Seinfeld, arguably the biggest comedian of our generation and other generations, literally starting on the same spot that Orny Adams is. And it's kind of an interesting kind of juxtaposition.
It was a good com doc. I'm making this stick.
You were just waiting for me to stop talking so you could say com doc.
I'm always waiting for you to stop talking, Matt.
But Yeah. But there's great documentaries on Lenny Bruce. There's a great Bill Hicks documentary called American, which has kind of has more of a psychedelic vibe to it and little illustrations kind of to it. Set the music. It's a little bit more of a documentary filtered through like a creative guy who wanted more than just a regular documentary, I think is a good one. I'm Dying Up Here is actually where I kind of found this inspiration was. There's a new Showtime series called I'm Dying Up Here coming up in...
I've heard about it in June.
It's coming in June. And that's based on a book about, or a short story or an article about the comedy scene in the 1970s in California. And basically Jim Carrey had optioned this story, and he's basically creating a series about it. And a series, it stars Andrew Santino, who we've had on the podcast to talk about it a while ago. Eric Griffin is on it. Al Madrigal's on it. Melissa Leo plays the club owner. It's kind of a Mitzi Shore kind of character. It's an inspired character, but there's like there's a Bill Hicks type of character. There's a Freddie Prinze type of character. You know, there's a lot of these types of characters on their show. So that kind of just spawned my idea of do we have too many comedy documentaries? Probably. For the diehard comedy fans, probably think there's too many comedy documentaries, but like I do think that there's still ground to cover as far as the world of comedy. But I think that it needs to get kind of beyond just a, hey, let's talk to a comedian about a specific topic. CNN ran a 10-episode series this past winter about the history of comedy. And I actually was kind of bummed about the documentary because every time I tried to tape it, CNN would break in with some sort of breaking news story. So I never actually saw that 10-episode or 7-episode series from front to back, unfortunately.
Do you think they ever ran it? Maybe it's just more fake news from them.
Fake news from CNN.
Wake up, America.
This is Wolf Blitzer with your fake news report of the day. Yeah. I don't know, but I'm rambling about comedy documentaries. I'm looking at you guys.
Cop Docs.
All right, Bram. What Com Docs do you want to talk about?
I think I've exhausted the subject.
You've exhausted the subject of the Com Doc?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Very, very cool.
Just
I appreciate
to say that. Com Doc a bunch.
I appreciate that. So, what's
your favorite romantic comedy documentary?
Rom-com doc. My favorite rom-com doc.
Yeah. Just checking.
Yeah, I got where you're going with that. You wanted me to put it together, and I put it together for you.
Picking up what you're putting down.
My favorite. God damn it! rom-com doc. All right, I see what you did there, Bram. I appreciate that. I appreciate that a lot. So, there's been a lot of talk about this Ari Spears incident. I don't know if you guys remember the Ari Spears incident we talked about last week. He got to a fight on Corey Holcomb's podcast.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, it seems like the comedy world, everyone's kind of weighed in with like a, oh, let's go. Let's see what people have been, I don't want to say shitting on Ari Spears, because I don't think that's the right way, but like kind of coming to his defense and saying like, you know, listen, no one should ever put hands on you if that's the case. So it was interesting to see that the fallout happened from that. So I saw a story on TMZ. I saw it on World Star. Like all those like kind of sensationalized gossipy type of sites had started picking up on it. So who knows? Maybe there's more to that story than who knows. But two other quick tidbits of news. Mike.
Two other tidbits of news.
Two other tidbits of news. Mark Maron is releasing a book about, you know, basically his best interviews from the WTF podcast, which I think is actually really cool because, I mean, Mark Maron, he's got to be up to like 700, 800 episodes of his podcast at this point. And I remember when he released the first 100 episodes on a double CD. And he basically made a TV series based on this podcast. Now he's releasing a book about this podcast. It just goes to show that like if you have good content, you can repurpose that and put that out into the world many, many times over. Mike Birbiglia pops into my mind as one of those types of guys.
That being said, anyone want to take the TV option on the Left Button podcast?
Oh, let's do it. We're looking for some TV. Let's call Showtime.
Oh, we got to get it paid.
Let's call HBO. Let's call CISO. Let's call Comedy Dynamics. Let's call Comedy Central. Let's call them all.
Animal Planet. Who gives a shit if they'll pay?
Yeah,
we'll just have to have like a kangaroo in the corner.
Definitely a fucking zoo in here.
That would be cool. I'd be totally down for Animal Planet sponsoring.
Sure, why not? Hallmark Channel.
Put some
at the end of every episode. We'll just be like, "I love you."
A very special episode of the podcast.
I respect your feelings.
I think that Mark Maron is an amazing interviewer.
I think
so. I believe that there's probably a lot of people that would not listen to a podcast or subscribe to one that would want to hear what he had to say to the president, or maybe just be turned on to what a good interviewer he is by reading a book.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like Mark Maron is doing to podcasts what Howard Stern has done to radio as far as interviews are concerned. Like, Howard Stern, love him or hate him, and I was definitely a disciple of Howard. I still love Howard, but like, I do feel like Howard has kind of made this little shift in his career towards the end. Is he's trying to figure out what he wants his legacy to be. So he's definitely, you know, there's all these crazy rumors about like stuff that's going on over there, and now he's no longer talking to these guys and this, that, and the other thing. I don't know any of those rumors are to be true, or I don't know what. I don't know any of the insides of the Howard.
No longer talking to who? What
do you think? like former Whack Packers that used to call it all the time are no longer on the show, or even staff members apparently now can't just ask Howard questions; they have to ask it through an intermediary.
Huh.
The story is you've clearly haven't heard the story, so I'll fill you in.
No, I love Howard, but I haven't listened for a while.
Since he's been on America's Got Talent, he met somebody who was kind of like a, I don't want to say a self-help guru, but like an author, and they wrote the book called Getting Shit Done. And he was so enamored by what this lady had to say, he basically brought her on staff to kind of like I don't want to say be his buffer, but it sounds like she's acting as his buffer, where it's like Gary Delabate, his longtime producer, apparently can't just sit down and have a conversation with Howard. He needs to like set it up through her or something like that.
So, wow.
Yeah, it's again.
I remember when he had the bee mask on and he had to come in and ask questions with the bee mask.
Yeah, that was because people didn't want to look at his teeth. But I think, again, this is all rumor, speculation, whatnot, but like, Artie Lang had recently come out and said something about it. There was different stories posted about it, but Howard's definitely changed up his legacy. Like, it's not as much interviewing crazy people. It's more like, I want to talk to people that are interesting and have good interviews with them too.
I mean, he gets amazing people now, and he does. It's been a shift. And yeah,
he does.
I guess
he does.
Going back to Maron, I guess that's kind of what he's always done that though.
He has, but I think that he did it on a new medium, so he can kind of be claimed that first guy, you know. And Maron's put out some fascinating episodes, like some really fascinating episodes. Like one of the first ones that pops in my head that's not Barack Obama was like when Todd Glass appeared on this podcast and came out. And Todd Glass had this crazy, not story, but like this really interesting, fascinating, like his logic behind it and why he was doing it then and there and all that kind of stuff. And it sounded like one of those things where Todd didn't have necessarily a struggle with being gay, but like he was just like, leave people alone. I'm coming out as gay to let people know that, like, you know, you have an advocate, and like, I'm just tired of people getting picked on. I'm tired of people getting whatever. So his whole thing wasn't like finding his true self. He like came out because he's like, I'm just tired of people like harassing other people. So
it was, yeah, and like the Robin Williams interview was amazing.
Yeah, there was the Robin Williams interview. There was the one where Louis C.K. cried. There was the one he got to the argument with Gallagher and Gallagher like walked off the podcast. There was the Carlos Mencia one where like Carlos Mencia basically kind of tried to defend himself for the jokes stealing accusations, and then he actually ended up coming back onto the podcast for like a follow up. I mean, he's had Dane Cook. He's had lately. I mean, Maron has definitely. I don't want to say he just has a rule. It's not a rule of like one time I'm talking to these people, I never talk to them again. But like, because he's been okay, there's plenty of people out there that I haven't talked to yet. He doesn't really repeat guests too often.
It's crazy that Bill Paxton was on like a month before he died.
And he was talking about like his heart condition and that he's had since a kid and the surgery and all that kind of stuff associated.
Yeah,
with it.
So basically the point is that like even if you're not a podcast follower or don't even know who Mark Maron is, if you see that like say Bill Paxton is on there in a book, you'll probably read it and he might turn a lot of people on to the podcast.
Yeah, way. I mean, that's the other thing too. He also doesn't just interview comedians. He started off obviously just talking to his friends. But he's interviewed obviously the president, but he's also interviewed actors, actresses, musicians, just interesting people. He's had Jack White on the podcast, and considering how frequently he releases two episodes a week, considering how frequently he puts it out and the kind of climb, like, and I'm also going back to Maron's Just for Last keynote where he basically said podcasting saved his life because he was going nowhere, had no ideas, had nothing, and basically he's like, I want to start talking to my friends on a podcast and just kind of do that, and that kind of like became this thing. And I mean, Mark didn't become successful till he was like in his 40s, you know, as far as podcasting's from podcasting. So it's really interesting. And I look at those guys who kind of became popular later in life, you know, Louis and Mark and guys like that. And I feel like they're way more interesting, not because for any other reason other than I think they have a lot to say at that point. When you're that old, you've seen some life. You've been kicked around a bit, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, totally. So good on Mark for releasing a new book based on the podcast. And I'm sure that, you know, not that this podcast needs to be plugged on our podcast by any stretch of the imagination, but hey, let's plug that Mark Maron podcast. People don't know that podcast, but they know ours. So who knows? So final bit of information is Maria Bamford is putting out her new Netflix special. We put the trailer up on the website on thelaughbutton.com. Go check it out. It's very Maria Bamford. You know, her last couple specials, she's kind of done, I don't want to say oddball or differently, but she definitely has done a special where she taped it in like her living room for her parents. And this one is basically her taping it in some other spots. Like she's in a living room in front of 10 people in one shot. Then she's doing it in front of a yard full of people. And then she's doing it here, there, and the other, everywhere. So it looks like she's taping it in a bunch of different areas and kind of maybe putting it all together as an amalgamation. But Maria Bamford is just one of those people where it's just super interesting, everything she she does. And she's also Lady Dynamite on Netflix. So let's end this there with that trailer, and let's cut over to my interview with Anthony DeVito here on the Left Bun Podcast. So here on with Anthony DeVito on the Left Bun Podcast. Uh-huh. How you doing, sir?
I'm great, man.
Yeah?
How are you?
I'm all right. I can't complain.
yeah. Okay.
Are we going to have a whole podcast of this laugh? Because I have a feeling this is the laugh.
Right yeah, now. I kind of maintain this the whole time.
Yeah?
Is it? You know, maybe I'll stop it from time to time. But yeah, for the most part, you know?
Do you consider it like a stoner laugh? Because it kind of has a little stoner to it.
Yeah, I get people. I never did, and then people have told me that throughout the years, and then I've been like, oh, okay. People most of the time assume I'm very high.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm just a chill dude, man.
A chill dude from New Jersey.
Yeah, Northern New Jersey, Bloomfield.
Which I just learned.
Uh-huh.
I did not know this. I'm a South Jersey guy.
Yeah.
Glassboro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Do you also get just very excited for no reason when you meet another person from Jersey?
I do. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Lauren's here too. She's from Jersey, so this is like an all Jersey thing. She's looking for a headphone.
Yeah, Lauren weaseled her way out of this.
Lauren, none of those microphones work. Relax, no. You're good. So, okay, so you're from New Jersey. You're uh-huh. born and raised.
Yep.
When did you discover that you wanted to be a comedian? Was it like young?
I knew young, but I was just super shy as a kid, and I was really quiet. I didn't think that was possible. And also, growing up...
You didn't think comedy was possible as a profession?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
Those dudes on TV, no, I don't know where they come from.
I thought, those were magicians to me.
Okay.
I mean, and then there was an old Rascals Comedy Club in West Orange when I grew up. And one of my aunts was really good friends with one of the bartenders there. So we would go, like, a decent amount. And I was amazed by them. I didn't know, I thought they were making it up. It was incredible to me that you could just walk out on stage and just instantly be funny for, like, 20 minutes to just a room full of strangers. I was blown away. So, I didn't think I could possibly do that ever.
And how old were you around this time?
I was probably, like, I don't know, 10, like 8 to 10, somewhere in there. Very young.
Okay.
And so, I mean, and I was super shy. So I would go to comedy clubs very young. And you could smoke in clubs at that time.
Yeah.
So just like walls of smoke. And then, like, you know, I'm the only kid there.
Yeah.
So
and you're a literal kid.
And I'm a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And I am petrified that they're going to say something to me. And of course they're going to say something to me. And now as a comedian, I'm like, if there's a kid in the crowd, it's like, yeah, I have to talk to the kid. That's
a
weird thing.
Absolutely.
But, oh, man, it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, they would just immediately, my whole body would get hot. I would start to shake. And then, yeah. But I knew I wanted to do it. I didn't think it was possible for me.
Gotcha.
I thought you had to just come out of the gate just born like that.
Just born a comedian.
100%.
So you're 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You learn, you still have a couple years in you where you're like, I might be a professional athlete.
Yeah, totally. I think that probably left me maybe 6 months ago.
You're like, okay, I can still try out for the Yankees.
Yeah.
I'm still young enough.
Yeah.
I got this in me.
Absolutely.
And then that dream's dashed by some traumatic thing, I'm sure.
Oh, well, I think just not playing.
it's not?
I think just never. No.
It's like trying to steal second, getting thrown out by a mile. That didn't happen to you or something like that.
No. I was obsessed with basketball growing up. That was my main folk. I was going to be a professional basketball player.
Really?
That's what I really thought. I mean, I am 5'6".
I was going to say.
Maybe pushing 5'7".
I was going to say. You don't have
the height. I know that. A doctor called me 5'7" a month ago. I almost kissed him on the mouth. I was like super obsessed with basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like my main focus. I thought I was going to be doing that. I had the strength shoes. I had all kinds
the shitty platform things.
Here's the thing. I used to wear them in school. That's how dedicated I was. Just killing my calves, walking up the stairs,
wailing on them.
Yeah, just God.
Did they help in any way?
No. I think I have a 9-inch vertical leap, maybe. I don't know. A vertical leap of a stone. I'm not. No, they didn't help at all. And I was just, I was slow. I moved like a cat in mud. I mean, I was so slow. We used to get killed. I remember we lost one game by like at least like 80 points. Like people would walk in.
Was there like a mercy rule or anything?
No, they would just like, but they.
They would do that now. Back in the day, they didn't give a shit.
No, they didn't give a shit. They would still go hard. Like these are kids trying to get scholarships.
Of course.
Who cares that I'm crying my eyes out at night? Yeah. No way, man. Like, it was. That's because, they would be like, you know, they would talk trash, and you'd be like, well, I didn't, there's nothing to say back. You're up 70 points.
Yeah.
You've dunked on me four times. And they're like, I'm about to slam on you. And you're like, yeah, you are. Like, I, what do you want me to say? I don't think so.
Judging by your track record, yes, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, so when did you, when were like, I got to get on stage and start telling jokes?
That probably happened, so I went to college. Graduated high school.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to college at University of Miami in Florida.
Okay.
I studied architecture.
Okay.
So
that's a big party school, right?
It is.
I feel like all the Florida schools are party schools.
Miami is a big party school. I was in the architecture program. Not a lot of partying there. It's just, you're just up all night, just, you know, drawing theoretical projects or whatever. It's
not
a lot
studying marine biology on the beach.
No, no, yeah. Not that cake job. I mean, man, what a life. No, so I did that. That was 5 years that I studied architecture, got a bachelor's in that.
Okay.
And then from there...
a bachelor's 4 years usually, buddy.
Yeah.
Just an FYI.
It worked. Yeah, that's why I do this now. no, architecture is different. They do 5 years.
Sure, okay. No,
you look it up, man. I did that, and then afterwards I went through, like, it was my first breakup that I had ever, it was my first girlfriend in college, long term, it was like 4 years, broke my heart, I was devastated. So after college I just moved to Hawaii. I spent a summer on the Jersey Shore actually after college, and then from there moved to Hawaii. Yeah.
Such Jersey trash.
I know,
Lauren.
I'm really trying to just get on this thing.
Such Jersey trash.
I lived in Manasquan for the summer.
We all went down the shore. We get it, Lauren. We all went down the shore. We get it.
Yeah.
He's talking about Hawaii.
She's not even on mic.
I know. He's talking about Hawaii over here, and you're fist bumping the Jersey Shore.
Yeah,
over
Jersey strong.
Okay. So you went to Hawaii.
I went to Hawaii.
Where in Hawaii?
Oahu.
Okay. So. I've been to Maui, not Oahu.
Oh, okay, cool.
Maui's awesome, yeah.
Oh, man, I wish. I was just so broke at the time. I didn't have money to travel the other islands.
And that flight is like less than $100. You're that broke?
Oh, to, yes.
Yeah, between islands.
At one point, I was living in the woods.
Oh, okay, well, okay. Didn't Chris Pratt live homeless out in Hawaii, too?
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
He lived in a van.
So
on
it's
the
you and Chris Pratt.
Really?
Hanging out homeless in Hawaii.
Wow. Such talent in those trees. I can't believe that. No way.
Yeah.
Wow, we gotta have some kind of reunion.
Yeah, he had like a bitchin' van with like spray painted sides.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, no, yeah. I had some shitty tent. Yeah, I didn't even have a tent. So I'll tell you what happened. So I'll go to Hawaii, devastated by this breakup. I'm there, you know, start anew, but like, you know, I don't want to learn another language, renew my passport, so I pick Hawaii.
Hawaii's great. It might as well be another country.
It really is.
Because it's in the middle of nowhere. Vegetation's different. It's
totally
awesome.
Different world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. It's 100%. Yeah.
Living homeless in Hawaii is definitely different than living homeless in like Milwaukee.
That's where, yeah. It's where you want to be homeless.
If you're homeless,
for
exactly.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I get there. I don't know anybody there. Get some apartment on Craigslist. There about a month. I get kicked out of that place, and then I have nowhere to go. I went to there to pursue a couple architecture jobs, but there's not a lot out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I had two interviews. None of them panned out, and it's not like I was going to fly back and forth. So it's like I'm in Hawaii now.
Yeah.
So I found a job. I was one of those like environmental canvassers.
Okay.
You know those like they're in like front of like Whole Foods and Union Square or whatever.
Yeah,
minute for the environment.
Exactly.
So I'm going door to door with that stuff. And you know it's a pretty easy job, and I work with all these just like real deal hippies. So they lived in the woods. I got kicked out of my place. I had nowhere to go. Those are the only people I knew. So I moved
to
in
the woods
with them to the woods. Yeah. Never
all
been
the
camping.
Macadamia nuts you can want.
All the macadamias you could want.
Okay, so you're living with these people for how long?
About 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So extreme, like you were homeless.
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 Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
I know.
Like legitimately homeless. Okay.
Homeless, but I had a job.
Okay. Okay.
I had a job, and I had a gym membership, and I would shower at the gym.
Okay.
So it was like...
You were doing all right.
I was doing all right, and I was rent-free.
And you're homeless in Hawaii.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
The best I've ever lived, by far. Not paying a dollar to a landlord, going into the gym all the time because I had to shower.
Exactly.
I was in the best shape of my life.
Okay.
I smelled fine. You know, that one thing, but it's like, I don't smell great now.
Yeah, well, if you were terrible smelling or covered in something, you could have jumped in the water at least.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Because the beaches there are just like free for anyone, basically.
For everyone. Yeah. Pick a macadamia nut off the tree, take a swim.
Exactly.
Paradise.
I got the visual. And what year is this? What year?
This is 2006 to 2007.
Okay.
So I was in Hawaii total about, I think, 4 to 5 months, something
okay.
like that.
Cool. And what called you back to the mainland?
I mean, I was very young in Hawaii. I was like 21, 22, something like that. And, I was ambitious. And Hawaii is not really a place for that.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
You could go there and just kind of get lost in the island.
Yeah,
life and...
people go there to get away or at the end of their life or when they're like, I'm all settled. I've done what I want to do. I'm here now. Let's go to the beach.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to do stuff. So eventually, I got island fever. Mm. And then from there, the guys that I worked with, the Woods guys, we moved to Portland.
Hawaii adjacent.
I know. Yeah. Hawaii's sister city.
The dreams of the 90s are alive in Portland.
Yeah. So lived in Portland, did more canvassing there.
Okay.
And then from there, moved back to Jersey after a couple months in Portland. So at this point, I think I'm like 20. Yeah, I'm like still 22.
Okay.
And then I was living at home for a couple years, working in an architecture firm in Edgewater, family-run firm. I was terrible at it. I got yelled at every day. That's crazy. There are buildings in Fort Lee that haven't fallen down yet that were on my watch. Just horrible as an employee. And saved up money, lived at home for a couple years, and then I had friends who were living in Paris doing architecture work, then moved out there for, I don't know, like 8 months, traveled around Europe a little bit.
So you're not even 24, 25?
I think I'm like 25 at this point.
It's a lot of traveling before
25. A decent amount of traveling.
Yeah, definitely.
But I knew I wanted to do stand-up the whole entire time.
Okay. Now, were you getting up anywhere there?
No,
or just
too scared.
Okay.
Just, and also, I really couldn't in, Europe
Hawaii
or whatever.
And,
I did my first set to be in Cambodia, where I'm like,
let me speak French to these motherfuckers. Figure it out.
But I think I had always been kind of writing stand-up.
Okay.
Just, not necessarily for anything, but just as, I think I just needed to do that or whatever. So then from there, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I was kind of I knew I wasn't going to be an architect, but maybe I'd work in the field of architecture. So from there, I moved back to New York after Europe. Then 26, and I was going to work Habitat for Humanity for a year. Maybe I'll like construction more. It's more hands-on. I feel, a little bit better about it. And then during that time, I started doing improv at UCB. I started doing a little bit of sketch. And my best friend since high school, Greg Stone, another hilarious, great comedian, he had been doing comedy. He's one of my, he's my best friend.
Okay.
We were, very close in high school. I started doing comedy in high school.
Okay.
So, I was always, I would always go to shows and I'd write with him or we'd write some sketches together or whatever. So, it was always very close by it. And he was always like, when are you going to get up? When are you going to get up? And I'd be like, give me more money. You know what I mean? Putting it off. And then when we moved back to New York, started doing improv. And then I would just, I would get so nervous in improv.
Yeah.
And then I would just feel so bad because I would just, because there's 9 other people on your team.
Of course.
And if you bomb, they all feel the brunt of it. So, I just felt so bad. I don't know if every improv scene, I had to be like, hey, fellas, I'm sorry. And then that had to be worked into the scene. So it became that. So I was finally I'm going to do stand-up and then started hitting up open mics.
Stand-up so it only relies on me fucking
yes,
up.
Yes, exactly. If I don't fail, fuck up, it's all on me. I'm not letting anybody else down.
Got it.
That's what I wanted. I was so the first mic I did, I think it was Cake Shop. I think Caper Lant was hosting it at the time. I was, 27, so this is 7 or 8 years ago, something like that.
Okay.
I went up under a fake name. I was, because, when you first start stand-up, you're not yourself.
Yeah.
You're a version of yourself.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah.
Especially because Greg is there, and I know him forever.
Yeah.
So he knows who I really am.
Yeah.
And so when I'm up there as a different person, he's like, well, what is this guy? What is, So I went up, I didn't write any jokes. I just went up. I kind of did a thing where I would just tell these long-winded stories that went nowhere.
Okay.
And the fact that they went nowhere was the joke.
Okay.
And I went up under the name Leslie Oliver. I thought if I have a funny name, I have that at least.
Okay.
And then I can go from there.
Yeah.
So I think I probably did that, for a couple weeks. And then I got, I guess brave enough to perform material that I had written myself, and it wasn't as bad as I thought. And then eventually just started getting more and more comfortable on stage, and that was kind of it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So So you're in comedy, what, 7 years now? 8 years
About
now?
About 7.5 I think coming on 8 years.
Gotcha, gotcha. And it seems like things are starting to happen for you.
Yeah, it's been a wild month.
Just to give you some background on my experience with you.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Is just as I first saw you at a Sweet Wine production showcase at Stand Up New York.
Okay.
3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Oh yeah,
I don't know when it was, but
yeah.
I was like, oh, this guy. And then they might have done another one at Caroline's or
yeah.
Or
I don't think I did
too.
The one at Stand Up actually.
Maybe it was one of Caroline's.
Because I wasn't
with
them at the time. I think it was probably Caroline's.
Maybe the ones at Caroline's I saw yet. And I was like, whoa. And you opened for Sam Morril's taping.
Yeah.
And that's and my partner in crime at the time, Mark.
Okay.
We were like, this guy's great. Like we had seen you 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And every time I was like you were clearly. First of all, you're in a group with your peers, but you were clearly like you could tell you had something, you had a voice, you had an idea, and we were like, oh, this guy's going to do some awesome things, and then slowly but surely, like we start seeing you pop up here, there, and the other thing. And the last month has been
wild,
fucking
man.
Bonkers.
I know.
I mean, you did Late Night for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. How was
that? Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah, it was Colbert, correct?
Colbert.
Yeah,
it was so surreal.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's sitting like 4 feet or whatever behind you, mm-hmm. and I could hear him laugh at
things.
Oh,
that's gotta
be insane.
That's gotta be awesome.
Yeah, no, that was unbelievable.
So, how much preparation goes into a late night set?
So for me, I mean, those jokes, I've been doing those jokes for years and years and years, and then working on that set as a whole, probably, I don't like. Maybe like 4 months.
Okay.
But the way it worked out was I was preparing for another show to do late night.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't in a stage where we had a date or anything like that.
Gotcha.
I was just running a very early on set for the booker to see.
Okay.
So then for them to go, okay, like here's what you would do with this set or here's what I like or don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And then the person who books Colbert saw me run that set at the club and was really taken by it, contacted my manager, and then was like, I can get a date right away.
Oh, wow.
So then everything smoothed over. And I am always like worried about just slighting anyone.
Yeah.
So they made sure everything was smoothed over. The other show was cool with it. And then started working on the Colbert set. And then that went through a series of tapes.
Yeah.
Just,
are they still tapes in 2017?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I get,
or is
it
just links? Like, YouTubes?
Yeah. Oh, no. I sent some tapes. They weren't into it, but I sent them.
To find the VHS.
Yeah, yeah. This is the way I work, fellas,
Sorry, guys. You said tape.
Said it. probably a month or two of just almost every set that I did sending out to them. Because it's tricky because the laughs have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
The booker already, loves the jokes. No, she can see over the laughs.
Yeah.
But for the people that work on the network, they need to see you doing well.
Yeah.
So the jokes need to land. Then you also, there can't be heckling.
Yeah,
then,
of course.
So it's a conundrum because the crowd, you want a full room.
Yeah.
But if it is a full room, there's nowhere to put the camera to actually for a straight on shot of you.
Yeah, it's true.
So
how do you do that?
It takes a couple months.
Strap a GoPro to your head?
Yeah, strap a GoPro. I put it on the guy in the front row's head, and I just go, stay still.
I am sure someone has done that.
Slap a 20 on the table.
I am sure someone has done that.
I'm sure. I'm sure. That was like a couple month process, and then the last round of it, I think it was like, it seemed like it was getting closer and closer, back and forth,
mm-hmm.
and then... On that week, on that Monday night, I got the call from agents that I had got the half hour.
Oh,
so that was that Monday night, right? So
that's
then
crazy.
I go to bed, and I'm like, I could barely sleep. I'm so excited about that.
Of course.
And I go to sleep in my room just to give you an idea of like how perception and reality.
Yeah, of course.
I go to sleep in my room. There's just spiders in my room. I don't know what to do with them. So I get bit up by spiders that night. So that night I end up sleeping on our couch in the living room, covered in like a tiny blanket, and then I wake up to a text from the Colbert booker that's like, "Do you want to do the show Friday?" So I was like. Yeah, like so
showbiz.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So within those like whatever amount of hours, both of those things happened, and then I think I ran that actual set only like 5 or 6 times.
Really?
Yeah, leading up because I ran it. I think at the maybe the Stand a couple times, Gotham a couple times, mm-hmm. and then the next day was the show, and it was nice because there wasn't enough time to really get nervous.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, so it's like you just walk right into it. And the jokes themselves, they're pretty much how I normally do them. Maybe a word chopped off here or whatever there. Mm. But the repetition there is just to get the muscle memory down.
Of course.
Because when you're doing the show, your nerves take over.
Of course.
So you just need your mouth or your brain needs to just be able to spit them out unconscious of the rest of you. Mm. So, yeah, I think after five or six times, I was a little scared that wasn't enough time for me to like have that muscle memory.
Okay.
But it worked out okay.
Yeah, I mean it's difficult sometimes because I mean, you know, 8 years in the comedy is where that thing is where it starts to twist, you know, like the first couple years. Every comedian I talked to is like, I'm dog shit. I was terrible.
Totally.
I was stealing someone else's act. I was doing this.
Oh yeah.
And they don't really like start to develop their own voice until, you know, you gotta put in the hours, Gladwell says, your 10,000 hours.
Right.
So right around that time is where it starts to kind of happen for a lot of people, and sometimes it can take as long as 10 years, 12 years. Mm-hmm. And for you, it seems like it's happened a little on the earlier side. Now, do you credit that to anything in particular, whether getting the clubs, see clubs at 10 years old or anything like that?
I think New York in itself really just helps with that.
Yeah.
And just being able to get up so many places. And then that I lucked sense. Out with, like, you know, guys like Sam, Normand, Rachel Feinstein, like John Fish, they would take me on the road. Becky Onwood as well. So I had a lot
of road work then.
Yeah, okay, I got to do a lot of road work. So that gave me a lot of time to just get better at a faster pace because I was doing longer sets in front of, you know, real crowds.
Yeah.
Rather than just like doing mic and performing for comedy people at UCB, which I did as well and to continue to do.
Gotcha.
And I think it's important to do all that.
Very, very cool. So now are you working most of the clubs around New York?
I've been lucky enough to almost
cool.
every club. Yeah.
Nice,
it's amazing.
Nice. You passed the cellar yet?
Yeah, it happened
Fucking nice, dude.
It happened the week after. It was crazy.
Okay, what's that story then?
So do late night.
Yeah.
So now like the week after that.
Now, first of all, real quick, late night happens.
Yes.
The next day was a Saturday. Correct?
Yes.
Okay, so is the phone off ringing off the hook? Are your friends
I was on the road. I was on the road. So it aired on Friday. I was on the road. Ryan Hamilton and I were in Saratoga Springs.
Gotcha.
I was middling for Ryan.
Showbiz.
Yeah. So I was on the road, and I spent all Saturday just sitting in a coffee shop in upstate New York, just answering tweets and Facebooks and emails, and it was crazy. Like moving, I was overwhelmed. It was
that's
unbelievable.
Great. Did you call your mom? Did your mom say?
Mm-hmm. My mom came to the table.
Oh,
she comes to everything.
Oh, that's great.
Everything.
You look so handsome.
Yeah,
that's what
yeah.
moms do.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. She says more. That's like, okay, you gotta stop. She says things. She was telling me it was after the Adam Devine, and she watched it. And she goes, you were great up there, and as a woman. And I was like, no, to whatever
is
coming next, no. Noah, as a woman, you're my mom forever. That's it. As a woman.
You can only imagine where she was going with that.
Yeah. Oh, God. No, she says things that are, they're very uncomfortable.
Oh, well, I mean, if she's taking me to comedy clubs at 10 years old, she clearly has
no,
a sense of humor.
And yeah.
She sounds like a cool mom.
She's a great mom.
Yeah.
She's the best. I mean, single mom.
Okay.
I'm an only child, so it's like we were friends growing up.
Oh, that's cool.
She never wanted me to not miss out like on having a dad.
Okay.
And she would do a thing, and this is the reason why I didn't start masturbating until way later in life.
Okay.
Because I was so uncomfortable with my body.
Okay.
Because early on, and I'm talking like I was like probably like 10.
Okay.
I knew about touching yourself or whatever.
Yeah.
We would just be sitting there, it'd be the two of us, and she'd be like, "Do you want to be alone with yourself?" And I'd be like, no, I don't. I do not. I don't think I ever do.
I don't think I ever will, Mom. Thanks.
Yeah,
you said it 10 years old to this
stuff like that
process.
Because she was like, I don't know what time guy. When do guys master? You know what I mean? So she's like, well, I got to be a dad. So maybe they do it now. I don't know. So she would just throw stuff like that out there. Dude, early on, I knew.
I'm sorry to laugh.
No, it's totally. No, man. It's ridiculous. She told me that the tip of your penis feels the best. I knew that. I knew that before I knew algebra. 100%. Yeah. Oh,
moms.
Mm-hmm.
I think my parents were pretty cool about that kind of stuff. Like, my birds and the bees conversation with my dad was, we went shopping one day and he knew I had a girlfriend. And
How old are you now?
I'm 37.
Okay, no, I meant how old then. Sorry. But good to know.
You said now.
I know. I
at the time, I was probably 15, 16.
Okay, cool.
So the conversation with my dad about the birds and the bees was we were going somewhere. We were like down in the aisle, like a deodorant or something like that.
Yeah.
And my dad goes, oh, look, there's condoms. Do you need any? I'm like, no, I'm good. Like, that was my birds and the bees conversation.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you know, I was a smart kid. I figured it out. So,
yeah.
You know, I paid attention in class, whatever. So, okay. So your mom loves you. You're so handsome.
Yeah.
All the kind of crazy moms.
Okay. Up.
Okay. So, so the seller happens like a week later.
The seller happens a week later.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So, Michelle Wolf, who also, so, I mean, I just, I
she
owe her everything.
She's a new special. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. She's the best. Mm-hmm. So Michelle Wolf and John Fish have been trying to get me in at the Cellar for a long time. Sam too. But I was always just I've always been like when it happens, it happens kind of thing. I never want to rush into anything, and especially the Cellar because you know I mean it's
the Cellar.
It's the Cellar. Yeah. I mean it's insane. So I didn't say anything, and I guess SD might have seen the Colbert set and liked it, and then maybe reached out to Michelle. I woke up from a nap on Thursday night.
Okay.
This is the following week.
The following week, okay.
From a text from Michelle that's like, hey, don't hate me, but I got you an audition at the Cellar or whatever for tomorrow night. And then, once again, all these things great are happening.
Yeah.
I got this horrible staph infection on the side of my ass, and I could barely walk. It got so bad. I literally went to the doctor, and the doctor went, you just been walking around like that? And I went, well, really. It's been very hard.
It's been very difficult.
So, oh, God. So I could barely walk. It was St. Patrick's Day, and I left Astoria for the Cellar maybe 2 hours early just because I was slow moving, and then, you know, walked my hobbled ass over here, and then I think I lucked out, and Essie put me on earlier rather than like a 1 a.m. spot or anything like that. I went up second in the lineup on the late show.
It's a good spot.
And Fish was hosting. So that made things like so comfortable.
Totally.
And it was a week after Colbert. If this was 6 months after,
yeah,
I'd have been freaking out. But Colbert, that was the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done in comedy since the first time I did comedy.
Yeah, okay.
So I kind of was riding that a little bit.
Yeah.
So I was very comfortable. Audition went well. And I've just been here for, I guess, like a month.
Now. When you say St. Patrick's Day, you mean St. Patrick's Day 2017.
Yes.
Like a month ago.
A month ago. Yeah. All this is, it's been just this happening in a month.
That's crazy. Now it's so funny how this works. It's like you've worked 8 years, and it's like, okay, these incremental steps.
Totally.
And then it almost like hockey sticks. Like, it's like, oh, cool. It's compounding interest.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
That's what people would say, and it's so hard to believe them. Back then.
Yeah.
Like 3-4 years in, whatever. Like things were happening, and I had the respect of my peers, which was more than anything. That's all I ever wanted, were the people that I admired in comedy to also admire the things I was doing.
Okay.
So, and they would bring up stuff, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, like, should I have that? Like, it never occurred to me. Like, I thought you just had to do it 25 years and then think that.
And then,
you
know? Then all of a sudden, sitcom. And
I kind
of
saw it happening with my friends, but I was like, yeah, but they're anomalies. Like, that's not how, that's not how it works for real. So, I do remember like them being like, yeah, you should get on TV or this or that. I'd be like, oh, I guess I should or whatever.
Yeah.
And then enough people would say, like, not a lot's happened just yet, but when it does, it's going to happen in bunches. Yeah. And I was like, I guess, not really thinking that could be a reality. And then, very much so, it's been that. But I prefer that to anything.
Of course.
It's just, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. It's always the work. It's always every day. It's not. I'm gonna be doing this forever, presumably. So, who cares about rushing anything?
There's gonna be ups and downs, peaks.
Yeah,
and
there's gonna be ups and downs, and why not wait? It doesn't make sense not to.
Gotcha. And then so you get news of the half hour.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy Central. Literally. Every comedian worth being mentioned in the world of comedy has had a half hour.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been called a...
They've skipped some, though.
They have missed some,
yeah.
But the track record's pretty good. Comedy Central's been doing this for 20-plus years.
Yeah.
And it used to be called Comedy Central Presents,
and then
it was called The Half Hour. Yeah. Now there's a new name, Comedy Central Stand-Up Presents The Half Hour. Something like that. So, like, but it's still the same idea.
Yeah.
They find comedians that... are worthy of kind of ascension into, like, these are the next big, this is the next wave.
Right.
And they give them half hours. They may not have a full hour's worth of material or, like, whatever.
Right.
But they showcase them.
Yeah.
And they pick a dozen or so a year?
Yeah, just about
15,
that.
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah.
And you were one of them.
I know. Dude, that was like, such a dream. Because the presents have been something that, I just watched endlessly.
I watched them
as a kid. I watched them all. I remember spring break. I was in college.
Mm.
It was Daytona. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I went to school in Florida.
Yeah.
So everyone was leaving to go out, and Nick Swardson's half hour came on, mm-hmm. and I had never seen him before, and was just glued to it for whatever that time was. And I mean, I watched so many of those growing up, and that meant so much to me to do, just because I was such a comedy fan and such a fan of those in general.
Of course.
So to join those ranks, mm-hmm. It's still crazy to me.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And I mean, every year they put them out, and then you know the next year, at least half of them have done something else.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Whether it be a TV show, a bigger special, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's slowly but surely all those people definitely do move up there. So it's really impressive to see.
Yeah, no, super.
So who's your class this year? Your class.
Who did it with me? Casey James Salango from New York. Joe Firestone.
Love Joe.
Yeah, Joe's great.
Adam Caton Holland.
Dude, that guy's so funny.
I mean, that guy's got a sitcom on.
I know.
He's written and stars in, and they give him a half hour on season three of the show.
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. That guy is so funny.
Yeah. Love Adam. And then a little bit of a down spot. LaShonda Lester got one.
Yeah.
And she had passed away a week before you were doing this taping.
I know. So it's
like,
so sad.
Yeah, yeah.
For hers, because I don't know what's going to air and what's not going to air.
Yeah, I don't know.
But so the night of the taping, I did it was Adam and myself taped on the early show, and then Yamanika taped on the later show.
Another great one. Yeah.
Yamanika's so funny, man. Mm-hmm. Everybody tapes in twos.
Yeah.
But because of LaShonda passing, just Yamanika taped on the late show, and then the second half was a tribute to LaShonda.
Oh, that's so great.
Which it was so nice. Two of her family members came.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. I think it was an uncle and an aunt. They played a clip of her at Caroline's. Mm-hmm. Super funny clip. I had never seen her before.
I met her at South by Southwest.
So funny, man.
3 weeks before the
no
before
way.
Passing. Yeah.
Wow.
For the first time. She was super. She was a total sweetheart.
Yeah.
I hung out with her maybe 10 minutes, but she was a total sweetheart.
Yeah.
I met her, yeah.
It just seemed like such a pro in the set that I saw.
She was also an older woman, so she like had she dealt
she
with some
chops.
Shit. She had some chops, and she had worked and stuff. She was,
So then she does that. They play the clip, and then brass band, New Orleans, comes on stage.
Oh, no way.
Starts playing, and then everybody in the audience got a rum runner, which was her favorite drink.
Oh.
Everyone took a shot in her honor while this like unbelievable New Orleans band played. It was something, man.
Oh man, it's like
it was super cool.
Getting dusty up in here a little bit.
Yeah,
tears.
A little bit.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's
and I didn't
really
even
great.
Know her, but it was such a moment.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it was. Oh, that's that. Hopefully that'll
hopefully they air it because
they'll
it really
air it or they'll
was
put it out somehow on video or
yeah.
clip or something like that. That's
very cool. Very special.
Yeah, because it was unfortunate because she seemed like someone who had put in a lot of work to get there, as all of you have.
Especially I mean the outpouring, and you know she happened to pass away on the same day as Don Rickles, and the outpouring of us, touching words for her was a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah,
it was like I noticed it in the morning. Like I was like, oh man, because like I had just met her, so I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm not claiming to know her in
totally.
Any way other
yeah,
than
yeah, yeah.
10 minutes at a festival before, a couple weeks before. But I was like, man, that really sucks because like she looked like she had all this going, and then you get Don Rickles, and you know, part of me was like, hopefully someone will she'll be talked about in some
way,
you know, because like Rickles obviously,
rightfully
so, should dominate the headlines,
sure.
but at the same time, you're just like, oh man, so it's like even in death, she was overshadowed a little bit, which kind of sucks. So let's get on the happier topics.
Yeah, totally, man.
Okay, so you tape your half hour.
So tape a half hour.
Did
yeah.
you kill it, or how did you feel
it
about
it? It went great.
Great.
Yeah, it went well. I mean, I'm a maniac. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
okay.
And TV tapings they're a little bit different.
Yeah,
it's not the same. The momentum isn't the same at a club. So like where it's like build, huge pop, build, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's like this just kinetic energy.
Yeah.
The TV taping, they're more reserved, and then they give big laughs sort of at the end of punchlines.
Mm-hmm.
But the taping, I mean, it went really well. At the time, I was like, I don't know if I pulled it off, you know, or whatever. But then I had my recorder on in my pocket, so I could just listen back to jokes in case like I screwed up any jokes to kind of give them a heads up in the edit or whatever.
Okay.
And then I listened back to it, and I was like, oh no, this went really well. You're a crazy person.
Well, I think that's a part of the comedian insecurity is like, what can I do better? What can I change?
Yeah.
Constantly modifying, constantly changing.
Totally.
Constantly adapting. And one thing I really like about comedians and comedy in general is, and I don't think people get enough, I don't think comedians get enough credit for that.
Sure.
Is they're constantly, the good ones, let me rephrase that, are constantly refining tweaking.
Yeah.
They don't want to make a joke that's 6 months old, 7 months old, oh, maybe 6 months, but like, they don't want to make Monica Lewinsky jokes for the rest of their fucking life. They want to talk about what's now, what's current, and that kind of stuff. And I always give comedians huge props for that type of stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's what's great about New York is it's just in between like the amount of clubs, the amount of bar shows, the amount of all shows, there's so much stage time to be had.
Yeah.
So there's so much opportunity for you to really develop material at such a clip.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great about it is like, so you have clubs, you have people that are just visiting. So it's like, it needs to work for people on dates.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it also needs to work for these comedy nerds, which is a whole new generation that never, that didn't exist.
They like, came up with the internet. They can pull you up on demand. They can see all your stuff.
Totally.
They can become a disciple of comedian X overnight.
Dude, these people are educated comedy people. So it's great because they reward originality.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're really, more so, they're rewarding the premise than they are the punchline.
I would agree with that, yeah.
But then at the clubs, they reward the punchline. They don't really care that much about the premise or originality.
Of course.
So it's perfect because it makes you such a strong performer because the jokes have to be original to meet the high standards of these comedy heads. Mm-hmm. But then the jokes have to be funny enough to just meet visiting people on a date. So it really makes you bulletproof.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Too, I know a lot of, I know people that talk about it that way.
Sure.
Where, like, you know, they almost appreciate the comedy diehards because it's like, oh, they keep you on your toes and they keep you fresh.
Yeah.
That's actually really interesting because, like, I'm one of those people, like, Bobby Kelly's a great example.
Yeah.
We're in his podcast studio, Riotcast. I've seen Bobby a million times.
Right.
I've seen a different iterations of his act and whatever.
Yeah.
And I appreciate watching it start. Like, I've sat at him at tables where he just starts writing ideas down on the note card.
So
I appreciate watching him kind of do it and like, oh, he changed that a little bit, or this is that, or whatever. So, like, I love watching that process. And I'm not a comedian,
but I do
appreciate the refining process of it.
Yeah.
But I also see, like, when they get that itch, they're like, oh, I gotta bank this, tape this, do whatever, and get it out of my head and move on. Like,
yeah.
There's that need to just shed the skin or to dump that 2 years of your life somewhere, document it, and then move the fuck on. So it's really interesting to watch that process happen with comedians.
I never had that feeling because this is the half hour is the first time where I really just like,
you're also newer to the game than say Bobby Kelly.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
But that feeling, I've sort of had it with this.
Okay.
Where it's like, I put this on television now, like right away, more than ever, I wanted to just do new stuff.
Oh, that's
like
great.
At spots that I've had around the city or whatever. Like, I'm doing an album coming up in a couple weeks, and I'm sure when that happens too, it's like, I'll want to just, I mean, I'm not going to. I'm not a crazy, you know, I'm not Louis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I need to do well on the road. Like, I can't, you know what I mean? I'm not going to just abandon ship with the cellar. I'm following Ray Romano and like, I think I'll do some new stuff tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, but there is that like instinct that was in me this week that I don't think I've ever had before.
Oh, that's cool.
Of like just like vehemently wanting to just push out new stuff faster and harder.
Is that? I mean, that sounds like it could be a turning point. Can you pinpoint the moment when you're like, I became a comic? Like,
no, yeah.
This might be one of those points though, because like that need to turn material and that need to like, kind of do stuff. That might be.
Yeah, it's a thing where I think like sometimes it happens where it's like it's a need, but the actual practice of it, you're still too scared to do it. You know what I mean? But I do. I feel the desire to do it.
If
I get up there and look at those like sullen, skeptical faces,
gotta give them something.
I'll get right into this is what I look like, da 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 or whatever. Yeah. No, 100%.
Gotcha. So you're retiring material. Like, I'm trying to think of material of yours that I saw. Chili Willy Penguin Bones.
Yeah.
I love that bit.
Thanks, man.
And then the one about your look in airport travel.
Yeah.
And about how your name.
Yeah.
I don't want to butcher it.
No, you're
jokes,
fine.
But those are like two, like.
Yeah.
And I feel like every time I've seen you, like, your name and the travel, that's like started your set. And then the Chili Willy Penguin Bones has kind of like ended it. So maybe that's kind of why I remember them so much or something
sense.
Like that.
But
it's funny. So like, I'll are those on the half hour? I'm assuming.
Those, Chili Willy Penguin's on the half hour.
Okay.
The Italy Lasagna.
Italy Lasagna.
It on the half hour.
Italy Lasagna.
But no, I'm definitely not retiring those for big shows or anything like that. I'm sticking.
It's a good opener.
I'm sticking to I have to.
It's a great opener.
Yeah.
It's a great opener.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, totally.
But there was like this, like, I guess, desire at just like other club spots or bar shows to like, you know, to really just not do them.
Okay.
You know, whereas like before, if it was a show where they were tight or whatever, I would lean on those. But I don't know. This could be super naive. It just like was the last like two or three spots I had. But those spots, like, I was like, let's do all new.
That's great. Yeah. And then you got to be almost be comfortable with the silence or be comfortable with the process of bombing.
Yeah.
Because you have to bomb to find that funny thing
yeah.
in there and
yeah.
chip away at it and make it
yeah.
nice and tight. You know?
That's I think that's huge. And that's one area where I really want to get better at.
Yeah.
It's just so hard.
Yeah.
Especially my nature is I'm a people pleaser. So the minute there's like no laughter, I'm like, what can I do?
Yeah,
what,
yeah.
What do we got? Does anyone, people want money? What do you guys want? Like I am so impressed by comics who just get up there. And I mean, usually it's more veterans than anybody.
Of course.
But that just get up there and they're just like totally comfortable
yeah.
in the silence. There's not a worry to be had within them.
They're just like.
Yeah. yeah. Some younger guys even do it too. And I'm like just blown away by it.
So who are your peers? Who do you consider peers that you started with? Like in
yeah,
in
yeah, for sure. I started with, I would say Greg, even though we
yeah.
started a lot earlier.
Yeah, totally.
But like we were really hitting the mics together.
I gotta get Greg on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah, he's like, oh my God. He's. Yeah. Just Mr. Radio, Mr. Podcast.
I love Greg.
He's everybody's favorite,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, totally. And he slated as Gary Veeder's roommate on
America's
Got Talent a couple years
back. That was my bedroom. Yeah. That was my bed. That was my bed, my bedroom. The
fucking
whole thing.
Greg.
Yeah. that was the best.
Yeah,
when
it
that
was
happening,
was
great.
It was great.
But, you know, Greg Stone,
okay.
Doug Smith,
okay.
Matt Wayne, for
okay.
sure. Jared Freed.
Yeah.
Michelle Wolf.
Gotcha.
Michelle even started, I think, a little bit after me. But she was within the group that were like hustling around, doing mics, stuff like that.
I was talking to Tim Dillon about Michelle Wolf, and he had great praise for her. He's like, there's some people that just, when they come into your life, whatever they do, they're going to be incredible at.
Yes.
And he said,
yeah.
Michelle Wolf is
Michelle,
one of those people.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
She could turn that, it's like, I think. Like,
she could be a politician.
She could be
a comedian.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I think like Burr had that bit, but like about Hitler and like the opposite respect or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was Lance Armstrong where it was like, keep him on the bike.
Yeah.
That's like how it is with Michelle. Like she's
yeah.
just doing comedy. She
yeah.
decided to do that. But yeah, she could have been president. She's
yeah,
just
yeah.
decided to do this.
Yeah. And she's got a full docket. HBO, Daily
oh,
Show.
Oh, she's
latest
unbelievable.
Wires.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So Michelle, Jared,
it's good,
Matt,
it's
Doug,
a good list so far.
Yeah, Greg. Trying to think of other ones. I mean, there's a lot of people that started and then just they don't do it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, it doesn't. It there should be a level of entry.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be this frictionless jump into whatever. Like,
No.
You need to kind of like you got to kind of deal with some shit to kind of get to where you're at and
yeah.
figure it all out. Be like, you know, it's like when you talk to every 14-year-old these days. They're like, I want to be a social
yeah.
influencer. It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
come on, like you got to do.
You got
there needs
it,
to be a barrier.
Yeah,
of something
yeah,
that you got to put in.
Not everyone gets to be a social influencer.
There's a level of minimum effort that needs to be achieved before
totally.
You kind of fall into other stuff.
Totally.
So like I do think that this isn't something for everyone.
Yeah.
Comedy's not.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It takes a certain breed. And also, once you get good at it, I don't want to say it becomes a lonely existence, but it becomes a somewhat isolated existence.
Totally.
Because you're on the road constantly.
Totally.
So all your friends,
yes.
when they get successful,
mm-hmm.
you will see them less and less.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the tricky part.
Yeah.
Because with more success and all the things that you ever wanted
mm-hmm.
for personal gain,
yeah.
you're alone now.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
It's so
And
weird.
When you're hitting the mics, everybody's there. Everyone's chipping in on jokes. You're all eating dollar slices
yeah,
of pizza
you're
together.
You're at the diner at the end of the night.
Totally,
and talking
man.
About
there
for 3 hours.
Is a certain
yeah, yeah.
camaraderie in that. That I think is only probably gained again if one of you achieves tremendous amount of
then
fame.
It's like, come
so
on
then,
with me.
Yeah, so then you're Adam Sandler
yeah,
making
yeah.
movies with all your friends 6 months out of the year or whatever.
Well, that's why he's wanted to do that. That
totally.
I firmly believe that's the only reason we have Grown Ups 1 and 2.
Totally.
It's because
totally.
Adam Sandler wanted to hang out with his friends
yes.
in like a house in Maine
of
or something.
Of course. Of course.
And he bought them all cars for their
it's
trouble.
It's the greatest. Dude, making a show with your friends,
yeah.
I can't think of anything better than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So I have no problems with that whatsoever. Make 100 grown-ups.
Yeah, yeah.
I totally get it. Yeah.
That's what I want to do. So you do that
yeah,
because
exactly.
I want to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I'll carry the torch.
Yeah.
I'll make Grown Ups 8.
Yeah, yeah.
All new cast.
When you die, I'll run with it. I got
yeah.
it. We'll keep this thing going.
Yeah, 100%.
Gotcha. So I want to wrap this up because we've been talking. It's been almost 45 minutes.
Oh,
at this point.
Oh, whoa,
yeah, it's going
wow,
quick.
Wow, wow.
I heard a rumor that you're friends with Mumford & Sons.
No.
You're not?
No, I'm not friends.
Okay.
I'm friends with the band Train.
Train.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was
yeah,
Mumford.
Yeah, yeah.
I was told
no,
Mumford and
no,
Sons.
No.
Oh, oh.
Unless, you know, I don't know. Unless we're pals and I don't know about
No, no, because I heard like you and Marcus Mumford had some sort of weird connection through
no,
UCB.
No.
Okay.
That might be Dan St. Germain. I'm not 100%
okay,
on
okay.
that, but it might be. No, I'm friends with the band Train. I did Access TV
okay.
2014.
Okay.
You know, that's an obscure channel.
Yeah.
Who's watching that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So people are tweeting at me afterwards. Not a ton, but One tweet is from @train. So I'm answering everybody. You know, it's not too difficult. Not a lot. So then I look and I'm like, all right, let's see what this guy Train's about.
Yeah.
And then I was like, whoa. This is the Twitter account of the lead singer of the band Train?
Patrick Monahan. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, I think I'm like, I don't know if this is a prank. I don't know if you meant to hit somebody else. And he was like, yo, man, I saw the Access set. I loved it. This is like, you're great, whatever. And I'm like, wow. Okay. So then he tells me, he's like, hey, no. So then what happens from there is like a month later, I'm doing an open mic at the Creek. And I'm just drunk. It's a late mic, you know, whatever. So then I'm drunk. I think I'm telling a friend about, like, you know, this Train thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, like, they're coming to Radio City. You should hit him up. You should see if you can open. And I was like, that's funny. I had like two margaritas in me. So I was like, yeah, it's funny. So then I direct message him on Twitter. And I'm like, hey, man, like, I don't know. I usually don't play small arenas, but, you know, I'll open for you at Radio City. He answers me back in a minute. And he goes, what? That'd be crazy. I'll have my assistant email you. And I'm like, is this for real? So then I wake up the
next
day.
What have I gotten myself into?
Yeah, exactly. So I wake up the next day to an email from the assistant that's like, look, we never have comics open for the band, but they would love to meet you. They're huge fans. Here's tickets. So I go. I'm like, I'm in the front. Like, I'm learning the songs Train sings as they're singing them. You know what I mean? Like, they're doing Calling All the Angels. And I'm like, oh, they sing this? Like, I didn't know that. And there's, like, people around
me. The
drops
of Jupiter are falling on you.
Yeah. They're like, yeah. So everyone's going nuts around me. I'm just sitting there. He, like, sees me during one of the songs, kind of gives me, like, a big hello, like, with his eyes. And I'm like, this is insane. So then I had to leave for, like, I think I had a stand-up New York spot.
Okay.
So I couldn't meet them. So in a way, like, I was like, look, man, I couldn't meet you. So in a way, he's like, wow, this guy's like really, this guy's big timing us. You know,
big
like, timing, crazy.
Yeah, totally.
But I was just, it was one of the first spots in New York, and I didn't want to miss it, whatever. So from there, sends me another email that's like, hey, we're coming back to New York. I really want to get you on our podcast.
Oh, Train has a podcast?
They used to. They don't do it anymore. Okay. It's called the Patcast.
Of course it is.
Right. So like the guests before me are like Sammy Hagar. It's like Sir Mix-a-Lot. And then me, who the only thing I've done at this point is Access TV. That's it. I didn't think I did This American Life or anything yet. This is just Access TV. So I go on. I'm past it. Two clubs in the city, maybe.
There's no reason for them to know.
No reason for me to be talking about anything. But like we're having a great time. I do the podcast. It's awesome. We have a blast. Great. So then you know, they're super cool. They're staying at this hotel like in the area. So we go out for drinks afterwards. Everything's cool. Dennis Quaid happens to also be staying at this hotel.
'Cause why not?
I know. So it's now me, Pat, and the keyboard player from Train, Jerry. Great guy as well. So we're sitting there, and I'm like, you know, and it's just me and them. So it's pressure, you know?
Yeah.
After it's like been 3 hours, podcast, and now we're hanging out. I'm like, I don't know what else we can talk about. I'm like, I'm quiet as it is, you know? So then,
you heard the Italy Lasagna bit?
Yeah, exactly.
What about Chili Willy Penguin?
Right. So then, Dennis Quaid, they're like, well, you know, Dennis Quaid comes over naturally. Yeah. So now I'm like way out of the conversation. Because now, at one point, I promise you, they're talking about the price of jet fuel on private planes. And I'm like, I'm just like, wow, I make people nervous.
I can know where to get a dollar slice, guys.
Yeah. So then, so from there,
the price of jet fuel.
Jet fuel. I know, like I'm going to chime in with, like, I heard about that. Yeah, it is rising. So I'm like just pounding booze to get more comfortable. At some point, I get so drunk that I go, let's all go back to the room and jam. And they, yeah, because I'm hammered.
Do you know how to play any musical?
No, I don't even. No. I So they all, because Dennis Quaid also does music.
Yes.
So they were talking about that a little bit. So then they're like, yeah, and I'm
That's
like,
a great
I
idea.
Can't believe that worked. So now we're back up in the room. It's me. My roommate, I had gotten my roommate to come at this point for just like, I was like, I need somebody else here.
To witness this.
I can't, people aren't going to believe this. So he comes, and so he's there. It's me, him, in a, you know, hotel room, nice place in Manhattan. Dennis Quaid, Train, and there's just singing songs. Hank Williams, they're, you know, covers, everything. It's wild. Dennis Quaid does an original at one point, and at one point it's like just me and him,
yeah.
and I'm like, oh, cool, like private concert, and he sings me this song, which I guess he sings to his kids, which is like a version of Old MacDonald Has a Farm.
Okay,
and then he's like, what do you think? Like I'm gonna be like, well, I don't know, Dennis, it's kind of flat. Like you're Dennis, you're in Interspace, like it's great. I don't
yeah.
know. Yeah. So then he leaves. So then it's just me and Train, and then like I'm like, what a crazy night, and then you know we part ways, and then. Months later, they have a cruise that runs every year. Sail Across the Sun.
Why not?
Why not? They booked me to do comedy on the cruise, and I did it last year. The other comic on the cruise, Nick Swartzen. So it was like so insane for me.
So serendipitous.
Yeah, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So Anthony DeVito, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast.
Oh, absolutely, man.
Yeah,
great.
This is awesome. We got to have you back on and tell some
I'd
more
love
stories.
To.
Maybe the next like time some triple things happen
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm done.
So where can our listeners find out more information about you?
You can go to anthonydevitocomedy.com.
Okay.
And then you can follow me on Twitter, anthonydevito_.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
All right, and you're doing shows around New York City all the time? And
yeah.
Right on the road.
I'll be in the city. Yeah, I'm at the Cellar a bunch, so... if you just follow me on Twitter, because I always post shows on
great,
there.
Great. Thanks, Anthony. It's
for
been
sure,
awesome.
Man. Thank
okay.
you, man.
All right. Thanks. Bye. And that'll do it with the interview with Anthony DeVito. Hopefully we learned stuff. We got to the bottom of things. He's a great comic. I highly recommend you all check him out. You're going to hear some great things from Anthony in the future. It's going to be super cool and super awesome. And yeah, so hopefully maybe you learned, you discovered a new favorite comedian today.
I learned a thing or two.
What did we learn today, children?
I feel like that's your default stock answer to everything. Hey, did you learn something? I learned a thing or two.
I learned that animals are great.
Yes.
Here on the Animal Planet.
Here on the Animal Planet presents the Life Boat Podcast. So yeah, before we go out, I'm going to we'll cut over to Nick and we'll do our Kermit as Limp Bizkit minute with Nick DeSimone, the new segment we talked about last week, where Nick will sing your favorite Limp Bizkit songs as Kermit the Frog, and then we'll take it from there. So Nick, what do you got?
I did break stuff last time. I don't know any other Limp Bizkit.
But dude,
do a little bit of rolling.
Rolling.
People in the house, put them hands in the air. Because if you don't care, then we don't care.
Ah, it so fucking works. It still works. What's the one song he does with Method Man? Everybody in together now.
Shut the fuck up. Yeah, shut the fuck up.
All right.
There you go. I gotta brush up on my
okay,
biscuit.
So Bram, where can people find you?
MetalInsider.net for all the latest metal news and analysis and reviews. Bram Filter on Twitter. I recommend you follow me there. I come up with stupid shit. Bramfetamine on Instagram and Metal Insider anywhere you can type it in.
All right. Nick, can you do that quicker?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Twitter, Buttery Spaceman.
Yeah.
Instagram, Ham_Cravings. You can find me in Tarby Rocks on the internet. That's my band. Hoboken, New Jersey area. Uber, be nice to me. Because everyone there makes me want to eat
be
the
nice.
Fucking gun.
Yeah,
be nice to me.
All right, and you can find the Laugh Button anywhere. You type in the Laugh Button in the browser, laughbutton.com. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, we're on all those. And you can also find me if you want at I am Kleinschmidt. That'll do it for it. Matt Kleinschmidt from the Laugh Button saying, see you later.
See you in hell.
Yeah.